Hey, Steve, let's talk some football. There's nothing else going on in the world.
Exactly. Yeah, let's take that attitude for the next few minutes.
Yeah.
It's amazing. In Football Morning in America, you opened up with Gil Brandt, who has been around so many drafts in his lifetime. And he made an interesting point because, obviously, Micah Parsons of Penn State is in this opt-out area.
Right.
What did you think about his point about military service? Because when you and I were kids, we were aware that guys were in military service and then suddenly would be with a team after being out a year or two. What was your thought on that analogy he made?
I had never thought of it that way, Steve. I thought it was really, really interesting. And to me, Gil is like he's a library, and you'd be stupid if you didn't check out the books occasionally, you know. And so every year around the time of the draft, I always call him, hey, what do you think of this draft? How is it? I mean, think about it. This is the 86th NFL draft. He has worked in some capacity on all but 19 of them. And so, you know, you suddenly start to think, okay, a guy who's been around 65 years or so is going to have some pretty good perspective. And his whole thought was that, you know, a lot of the military guys, when they would go off or have some service to do, late 50s, early 60s particularly, very often they would come back and they wouldn't be the same player. Now, you obviously can't say that with Roger Staubach, who clearly is probably the most famous player of the last 60 years to have gone off for military service after winning the Heisman Trophy at the Naval Academy. Yeah. The Cowboys drafted him, and when he came back, he was a great football player. So that clearly is not the guy that Gil is talking about, but there were so many of them in those days, including a couple, at least, who were Bob Kalsu of the Buffalo Bills, who went to Vietnam and was killed. So, look, you know, there are, I think there are a lot of examples the way Gil, you know, that Gil refers to. And look, here's the other part of it, Steve. I think about Caleb Farley, okay? So today, as we sit here, Tuesday, April 20, it has been 504 days since Caleb Farley has played in a football game.
Right.
He's one of the best cornerbacks in this draft. And not only has he been inactive for that long, and all he's been doing is working out, but he had back surgery last month, and he's not going to be given a clean bill of health until probably mid to late July. So, I mean, that's a lot to digest if you're an NFL team. So there are a lot of these guys. I think there are a total of, as I counted up, and I forget whose list it was, but I looked at the top 50 lists of his prospects, and 11 of the top 50 opted out last year, either for full or part season. And that doesn't even include Trey Lance, I mean, who only played one game, and it was manufactured so that Trey Lance could play a football game last year when North Dakota State played Central Arkansas. So I think it's something that you have to be concerned about, and it's one of the reasons why I think this draft is, I mean, I just don't think you can look at this draft the way you look at every other draft when you say, 14th pick in the draft or whatever, like the Eagles have the 12th pick. Oh, they're going to get somebody to help them right away. I mean, not only is that, you know, not necessarily true, but I think especially this year because of all the uncertainty.
I remember when Micah opted out here in early August, I made the point then, which then goes to Gil Brandt's point, that he will now go 19 months between playing games. And I'm talking about him playing the first preseason game.
Yeah.
It'll be the first game. And this is the same for all the opt-outs. They'll go 19 months between playing games. Now, Farley's a little different case out of Virginia Tech because now he has, obviously, back surgery to go with it. Micah hasn't had surgery. But that's my point. That's the great unknown. What does somebody look like after not playing for 19 months?
Yeah, and no one knows. And I think with different guys, it'll be different. And I was talking to one team the other day, and I said, you know, the amazing thing is all three of the top tackles, you know, in this draft, and that would be Penei Sewell, number one, Rashawn Slater, number two. I mean, it depends on how you really grade them, but Elijah Vera Tucker, who's either a guard or a tackle from USC, those are the top three offensive linemen in this draft, and they all opted out last year. And one of the other things that happened, they tried to get Rashawn Slater to play in the Senior Bowl, and he said, no, I haven't been, I'm not prepared to play in the Senior Bowl. So there's all kinds of things. Like one general manager said to me, you know, opting out is one thing, but then you have a chance to come in and show everybody who's forgotten you because you haven't played football in over a year what you are, and you say no to that. I can tell you, this general manager I was talking to about this last week said we will not be drafting Rashawn Slater. Not necessarily that we would anyway, but he's off our board, you know, because after that. So there's all of these things that teams never have had to think of before.
All right, now let's get to the dominoes. And this was something you brought up in your column, Football Morning in America, maybe a week or two ago when the TV contract was announced. There was a certain order the NFL wanted to be in. They wanted to get labor peace first, then go after the TV contract.
Yep.
People forget how narrow the margin was on the yes on the labor contract. Give us an idea exactly how narrow and what that meant to now the billions they're going to get over the next 10 years.
Well, one of the things that Roger Goodell told D. Smith and the Players Union, this would have been 15, 16 months ago, when they were negotiating a new CBA, he said to him, listen, I can't go and talk to the television networks without labor certainty. And so if we have labor certainty, you know, say for the next decade, we're going to be able to do great in our media negotiations. And that was part of the reason that, you know, I'm sure that D. Smith and at the time Eric Winston, who was the outgoing president of the Players Association, that's one of the things that they knew. And I'm sure they pushed that, you know, with their players that, you know, this is part of the deal. And so they voted in mid-March, you know, 13 months ago. And the vote ended up being 1,019 to 969. It was in favor of the new CBA that will run till 2031. And what is so interesting about that to me is it says two things. Number one, a margin of 60 votes total, you know, essentially is a margin of 1.9 players per team. So two players per team. Mm-hmm. The average locker room voted 32 to 30 in favor of this. Mm. So very narrow. And when you have 30 players on average on every team voting against the CBA, and now they have to deal with that over the next 12 years, essentially 11 years, I mean, there's a cost to that. It's one of the reasons why, you know, honestly, that we're that the league is in the situation with the players, and so many of them say we're not coming to any of these workouts in the off season. They'll say it's because of COVID, and it's the game is safer if you don't have these workouts, which really is a bunch of bunk. But I believe it all goes back to the 969 guys who are basically saying this is what you get for forcing this labor agreement that so many of us didn't want down our throats. And so that's probably not entirely fair. It isn't entirely fair, but I think that's what happened this time. And it's clear there's no way the NFL would have gotten $113 billion in media contracts starting in 2023 over a 10-year period. Just that would have never happened, and because they wouldn't have had labor certainty. So, you know, at the end of the day, they're going to play football, and it's going to be on TV mostly, and, you know, we'll all forget this, but that's what a lot of people around the league are talking about right now.
It's amazing what the dominoes mean. I mean, that narrow to open the door to that many billion. All right, finally, yeah. On the rules. On the rules. I know I was talking with a couple of Big Ten officials the other day who were at a scrimmage here, because you and I always have to keep up. What do they want to do? What do they want to emphasize? What does the NFL want to do with any rules, tweaks, especially when it comes to replay?
Well, I think most, I can tell you, everybody on the 8-member competition committee is in favor of giving the replay assistant upstairs a little more power. Because as it is right now, the replay assistant in New York, all of whom have the ability to have contact with the referee on the field during the game, you know, as of now, they've been very hesitant to call down and say, oh, my God, you just missed a blatant guy's foot was out of bounds. You just missed that. You know, you guys should have a crew conference and, you know, throw a flag for, or, you know, put the guy out of bounds at that point. They haven't been willing to do that. And so in the three or four times every weekend where something is so obvious but it isn't called on the field because the refs on the field just missed it, that's what they're trying to fix with giving the replay assistant upstairs more power to call down to the ref and say, you just missed an obvious, trapped ball on this play. And, Steve, normally you might say, okay, well, then the coach should throw a flag about, on that. Well, if he's either out of replay challenges or, it's in the last 2 minutes of a half and all that, you know, you ought to be able to have a vehicle to – the competition committee believes you ought to have a vehicle to be able to fix obvious wrong calls. Now, I had thought, and so they're going to vote on this tomorrow, I had thought for sure that this was going to pass, but last week there started to be some negativity around the league after they had a league video conference call, and people started asking questions about what exactly this means. And I think there's some owners that are afraid, and some club officials that are afraid that it could be a flag fest, and there could be just too much. And last year, Steve, you know, last year the number of accepted penalties in a game was down more than 3 penalties per game. I don't think coaches universally love that, but I can tell you, executives, league officials, everybody, they absolutely love that. So they don't mind correcting obvious wrong calls, but the one thing they don't want to do is to open it up to have a spate of flags now. The one thing I think that will pass, though, is this rule that's going to make the number system look a lot more like college football.
Right.
As I wrote in my column, there's 2 Los Angeles Rams right now, Jalen Ramsey and Robert Woods, a cornerback and a wide receiver, who both very much want to wear the number 2. And one of those 2 guys is going to win. You know, one of those guys on that team is going to wear number 2 next year. And right. Until now, really, as you know, receivers had to be in, you know, between 11 and 20, or 10 and 19, rather, or, in the 80s. And now they're going to let receivers basically wear, a much different and a much wider variety of number than they've been able to wear in the past.
That's okay. I broadcast games that usually have as many as 10 to maybe 15 duplicate numbers. So
yeah,
2 5s,
yeah.
2 2s,
that's
2 10s. So yeah, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Appreciate it, especially on such a busy day like today.
Hey, no problem, Steve. Enjoyed it. You have a great week.